The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew.
Glory to you, Lord.
At that time, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and behold, a Canaanite woman of that district came, and she called out, "Have pity on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." Jesus did not say a word in answer to her. Jesus' disciples came and asked him, "Send her away, for she keeps calling out after us." Jesus said in reply, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But the woman came and did Jesus homage, saying, "Lord, help me." He said in reply, "It is not right to take the food of the children and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Please, Lord, for even the dogs eat the scraps that fall from the table of their masters." Then Jesus said to her in reply, "O woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish." And the woman's daughter was healed from that hour. The Gospel of the Lord. One of the amazing things about this gospel is that we see Jesus, the Son of God, being surprised. Now, you would expect God, who knows all things, would never be surprised. But Jesus has come across a very surprising situation here, and we see how he begins to deal with it within the course of the story. In the sections before this gospel, Jesus has been preaching about the kingdom to the Jews, to the Pharisees, saying the kingdom is like the treasure in a field. He multiplied the loaves. He did all of that, and they still failed to believe. He was sent to the Jews to bring them salvation, and they essentially said, "No thanks." I'm sure that's surprising. We thought if they accept the law, they will accept the fulfillment of the law, namely the Son. And that wasn't the case. And so Jesus heads up into pagan territory. King Herod Antipas was busy persecuting Jesus and the disciples. They'd already beheaded John the Baptist. And so he goes outside of the land of Judah to the north, to Tyre and Sidon. And it reminds us of another story from the Old Testament, that of the prophet Elijah. After Elijah had the big battle on Mount Carmel with the prophets of Baal, he too was in danger. Queen Jezebel put a price on his head, and he heads up north. And in the process of doing this, Elijah had to tell King Ahab that Israel was going to suffer a terrible drought. No rain was going to fall because there is no faith in Israel. As long as there is no faith, as long as there is idolatry, not one drop of rain will come from heaven. And so he goes up, and he goes and meets this widow of Zarephath, who was going to cook a meal for her and her son, and then proceed to die because they had very little food left because the famine had infected them too. But Elijah goes and says, "Make me a cake and bring me something to drink." And the woman says, "I don't have much. If you trust God, he'll take care of you." And she goes and makes this for Elijah. And for the whole time of the famine, the oil she needed never went dry. The grain, the wheat she needed, never went empty. She trusted God. She had Elijah told her, "Have confidence in God and you'll see great things." Jesus told this to the Jews. They didn't pick it up. He goes up now to the area of the Gentiles, to the pagans, not intending, it seems, to preach, but to work with the disciples. And out of the midst of this, here comes this Syrophoenician woman, this woman of a pagan faith. And she comes to Jesus and addresses him as the Son of David. She knows who he is. Had to catch him off guard. "Good Lord, I'm with my people. They don't know who I am. I come up here as a stranger. She knows who I am. What's going on with this?" Very ironic. And in the midst of all this, He begins, it seems, to test her. How much confidence does she have? Does she believe in Jesus just because she heard he's a miracle worker, or because there is something she wants, or is there something deeper going on that she knows that Jesus is the Son of God? And we see how Jesus reacts with her. It's amazing when you read the Gospels, Jesus never reacts to people in the same way. He doesn't have, if you will, a certain response he makes to everybody. He deals with this woman as she is. And so she first comes, and the first thing he does is he ignores her. She keeps on pestering him. And then the disciple says, "Lord, you know, get rid of this lady." And he tells her, "I'm only sent to the Jews. I'm not sent to your people. You're out of luck." Because the Lord knows his mission was to bring the Jews to fulfillment in the law, to give them that new covenant, to bring them salvation. And yet the woman did not give up. She was persistent. She was confident in God. And then Jesus kind of lays the big one on her. He says, "You don't take that which is valuable, that which is the food of the children of Israel, and give it to the dogs." In other words, you don't take something valuable and give it to someone who's not going to see any value in it. You know, pearls before a swine. You don't do that. That's a waste. That's not respecting the dignity of what's being given. And it's also disrespecting the people who it was for. But the woman had an answer for that too, and says, "Now, Lord, even the dogs get to eat the scraps after the people have eaten." She wasn't giving up. And it's ironic because, you know, it's funny. We see Jesus multiplying the loaves, and 5,000 were fed. They gathered up those baskets. Well, where were the scraps going? We see where the scraps went. They went to the Syrophoenician woman. And in the midst of all this, what happens? We see Jesus coming to say, surprisingly, "Woman, great is your faith." You know, in another part of the gospel, Jesus says, "When the Son of Man come, will he find any faith on the earth?" He didn't in Jerusalem. He didn't in Judah. He did in this woman. The last place you expect to find faith, he found it. And he gave thanks to God, and he granted the woman what she wanted. Her daughter was healed. Says a lot about us, too, this gospel passage. That this woman had this persistent confidence in God, in God's mercy, in God's providence. And we have to ask ourselves, do we live in a world today, even ourselves personally, do we have confidence in God? We know we have confidence in certain things in this world. We have confidence in things we can control. We have confidence in things that we've made. We have confidence in certain things that we're familiar with, as part of our nature. But do we have confidence in something we can't control, in something we can't understand, in someone who comes to us mysteriously, who is constantly guiding us, comforting us, protecting us, and providing for us? Do we have confidence in him? We look around the world today and we see there's not a lot of confidence in God, but there's a whole lot of confidence in stuff. Because when stuff starts to fail and you lose confidence in stuff, you fall into all kinds of a problem. But that's because we have put that over confidence in God. If we believe God is who he says he is, and if we believe God cares for us and loves us as he says he cares for us and loves us, and there's nothing in the world that's ever contradicted that fact, then our confidence in him should be boundless. That's often not the case today. We tend to trust anything but God or anyone but the church. Oh, they don't know what they're talking about. If this isn't the case, they don't understand what's going on. We need to trust in this concrete stuff. And we find ourselves over and over again not trusting God and trusting stuff which is liable to deceive us. Over and over again. When we think about it, that's the definition of sin, the radical mistrust of God. That's what got Adam and Eve in trouble. The devil said, he doesn't want you to eat that apple because you're going to become like him if you do. And all of a sudden, well, I don't know if I can trust God. And that comes down to us today. How much do I trust in the Lord? Do I trust him enough to put my life in his hands, to make the sacrifices he asked me to make, to serve him as he asked me to serve him, to pray to him every day and ask for his guidance and to give him thanks and to ask for his help? That comes from confidence, to know that God is with us and that God has been with us and he's never left us. We have chosen to leave him sometimes, but he's never left us. And the greatest thing about this is that the only thing that builds confidence is the awareness of the one who we have confidence in. And so today we need to take a note from this, a page from this woman's book. How do we have confidence in God? By constantly being with the Lord, by praying every day. And one of the things I've made a decision in my life several years ago. One of the big, I think, tragedies that the human race has is we don't see the importance of prayer as a whole. Some do, but the majority don't. You'd be surprised how many times I've heard people say, "I don't pray." Don't pray every day. You might not pray at all. Now, what a mistrust of God. What a lack of knowledge of God. And yet people make that statement every day. And then for us then to respond to that, oftentimes priests or other people will say, "Well, just pray." Well, you know, telling somebody just pray is like handing me a hammer and say, "Go build a house." I don't know the first thing about building a house. I'm not an architect. I'm not a contractor. I don't know how to frame a door. I don't know how to do any of that. I'm clueless. Don't ever ask me to build you a house. Don't do it. But yet we ask people to pray. And we say, "Well, how do you pray? What is all this about? What does it mean to say you talk to God? What does that mean?" And we have to get back to those basics, because over the past 40 years, we've lost, in some cases, the ability to really talk to God, to really pray. Because to pray means to, first of all, have God front and center in your life. And never to lose sight of Jesus. You know, last week in the gospel, Peter started sinking because he started worried about the wind blowing around him instead of worrying about Jesus. Instead of focusing on the Lord. That's oftentimes our crisis of faith and mistrust today. We're listening to all the hot air going around with the politicians and the economists. All that hot air is blowing us away from keeping our view on Christ. The Lord says, "It'll be okay." The Lord says, "We'll get through this. There'll be sacrifices, but you will survive this." That's what'll happen. That's what the Lord teaches. And so for us to know that, to build that confidence, we need to pray. And so in thinking about this, you realize in 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has come up with various ways to stay in contact with Jesus Christ. And we need various ways because no two people are alike. We all deal with the Lord in different ways. We all have different things to offer. We have different things to ask for. We have different gifts. But there are certain things that we have in common. And that is, the Lord gave us a voice, he gave us a mind, he gave us a heart. And those things need to be brought together for us to talk to the Lord, to share our life with God. And so, when we think about it, it's always been taught, all prayer begins in vocal prayer. And so when we look at one of the great prayers of the church, one of the greatest has been the rosary. And the rosary has one purpose: to keep Jesus front and center in our mind. That's why we have the 20 now mysteries of the life of Christ and his mother. Because when we have Christ in the front of us, we're not going to be lost. We're going to have that confidence to ask him. And people will say, "Well, Father, you know, I don't have time to say a whole rosary." Yeah, say a whole rosary. My new mantra is a decade a day. A decade a day. Takes 2.5 to 3 minutes to say a decade of the rosary well. 10 Hail Marys. And you know what? In the middle of the Hail Mary, do you know what word is in the middle of the Hail Mary? Jesus. The very middle of that prayer is Jesus. We have the Lord's Prayer, which is what? "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done." Right in the middle. And then we have the Glory to Be, which does what? Thanks God for being God. It praises God because he is who he is. And in the midst of saying those prayers, and then meditating and thinking about over the course of the day, whatever mystery of the rosary we're looking at, like today, let's say we look at the first sorrowful mystery, the agony in the garden. We think about this in the course of the day after we've said our decade. We say, Lord, what challenges have I been given today that I think are too big to handle? And let me give them to you. Not my will, but yours be done. What am I facing here that I can't face without your help? And every day we do a different mystery. And every day our view of Christ widens. And every day we become more and more confident in God's power. And when we become confident in his power, we become eager to ask for his help. We become clear on what he has given us. And we become grateful for that. And then we can be like the Syrophoenician woman. We can ask and ask and ask. And we're not going to get tired. We're going to keep on going like the widow and the judge. Give me what I deserve. Well, don't ever say that, because we don't deserve much. Give me what I ask you for, Lord. That's better. In your mercy, hand it over, please. Because we know God keeps giving us. God, the Father, gave us his Son, who died for us on the cross and gives us new life. The Son gives us his body and blood, that we can be strengthened in this life, that we can be closer to him, so that we can let our life be shaped more by him. And in the midst of all that, we can then have our faith grow, our confidence in God's love and mercy grow. And as those things grow, and as our confidence in God grows, then all of a sudden we realize this life is not as hard as I thought it was going to be, because I'm not doing it alone.